Hello, crackheads. You're listening to Paranormal Cracktivity. I'm Justin.
And it is me again, Drake.
Hello, Drake. How are you doing?
How am I doing? Overworked, underpaid. How about you, Justin?
I'm doing pretty well. It's raining. I love the rain. It's a nice day. It wasn't raining earlier, so I went to the farmer's market and got some potatoes and persimmons and an onion. And then I went to the coast and went for a little walk with Sadie, so that was nice, over near Santa Cruz. So,
yeah. What is a persimmon? It sounds like I'm allergic to it.
Persimmons are very similar to apples, depending on the kind that you eat. Fuyu persimmons are actually kind of shaped like apples, but they're smaller. And if you wait until they're, like, soft, almost like a ripe tomato, then the consistency is like a peach, and they're sweet like a peach, and you can actually just bite right into it, like you're eating an apple. So it's really good. It's like candy, actually. You're probably allergic to it, indeed. But yeah, they're really, really good.
Okay, learn something new every day. What color are persimmons?
Orange.
I'm thinking that they're like periwinkle. I think feel like that's a good color for a fruit called persimmon.
Yeah, that would be a good name for a periwinkle fruit. A periwinkle persimmon.
Periwinkle persimmon. Copyright it.
Copyright. Dreek, can you believe that this is episode 10 of Paranormal Cracktivity?
The way my life has been going, yes, I can believe.
I can't believe we're already here at episode 10. Wow.
Honestly, yeah, I mean, we've been doing it, Justin. We've been podcasting.
We have been cracking, cracking heads. Thanks to all the crackheads that have stuck with us for 10 episodes.
Especially that one listener in Asia.
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
We appreciate you. We appreciate
from the bottom of our hearts.
Yes. And also, I'm very happy to announce that for episode 10, we will be taking a break from Dennis Nielsen. Thank goodness. And today's episode,
hallelujah,
will be brought to you by the one and only Drake.
Oof. I got some big shoes to fill. That Dennis man. Mm. So, Justin, are you excited to hear what we're going to do today?
I am. What are we getting into?
We are getting into... I'm sorry, I had to do it. We're doing another disappearance.
Oh, wow. Yay.
I didn't mean to do it. I'm so sorry. I didn't think about it until, like, literally now that I researched another disappearance. But
I'm so excited.
This is a special disappearance.
Ooh, okay.
This is the disappearance of Amelia Earhart.
Whoa.
Same thing I said.
Oh, man. I don't think I've ever really heard this story in depth, honestly. I'm really excited.
I really hope I can do her justice. And let's just jump right in. So we're going to start with the early childhood of Amelia Earhart. Amelia Earhart was born Amelia Mary Earhart in Atchison, Kansas, on July 24th, 1897, to Amy and Samuel Edwin Earhart. She was the couple's second child, and their first was a stillborn, so Amelia was their first living child. And she was named after her grandmothers, Amelia and Mary. It is said that from birth, she was a very relentless child, and that's not relentless. She was a very restless child. Mm. And she was a true tomboy from the beginning of her life. Now, I think a few years later, she had a younger sister, and her name was Muriel. And Muriel, oh, I hate saying that name. Muriel. I just think about Courage the Cowardly Dog.
Muriel!
Okay. So her and her younger sister Muriel both enjoyed riding on ponies and just doing things that girls weren't supposed to do at the time that they were growing up. They also liked to hunt, and they specifically liked to hunt rats with rifles,
Okay.
which I've never heard of. I don't, are there like wild rats?
Oh, I don't know. I'm probably. I'm sure, yeah.
So anyway, Amelia loved chemistry and she loved sports. And this, during this time, Amelia was discouraged from doing those things simply because she didn't have a dingling.
Of course.
So they didn't want Amelia. These are like people in her school and like her parents. They're not wanting her to do sports and chemistry because those are things that are seen as only men can do those things. So her mother was not happy that her daughters were like not prim and proper little girls. And she was also not happy that they weren't what society wanted them to be. And she tried to control and shape Amelia and Muriel's way of thinking so that way they would, I guess, be brainwashed into like being someone's wife and not working and just wearing pretty dresses.
Yeah. That's a shame.
When Amelia was 10, the family relocated to Des Moines, Iowa, after her father was unable to get a job. Later that year, the Iowa State at the Iowa State Fair, she was able to see her very first aircraft. She described it as, quote, "a thing of rusty wire and wood and not at all interesting," end quote. Which is very
Okay.
ironic because, you know, she is Amelia Earhart, the Queen of the Skies. Anyway, even though Samuel eventually found a good job and his family was now well off, he still took to alcohol and he began to drink a lot. He tried to get treatment for his alcoholism in 1914, but he was forced to retire from his job because of the ongoing alcoholism. In the same year, her grandmother, Amelia Otis, passed away. So Amelia's grandmother, Amelia, passed away, the grandmother that she was named after. And this left Amelia shattered and brokenhearted. When her grandmother did pass away, she left her money to her daughter, but in the form of a trust because she worried that Samuel would just drink it all away.
Oh.
Which, I mean, how does a trust work? Versus like getting a check from someone.
I have Google right here. I can search it up.
That's the way to go. You search that while I continue. In 1915, she said that her childhood ended after her grandmother passed away. So after her grandmother passed away, she felt like that was the very end of her childhood. Her father was able to work again, but this time the family had to relocate again to St. Paul, Minnesota. Something happened again, and Amy decided to move herself and the kids to Chicago, where Amelia attended Hyde Park High School. The yearbook from that year that she was in college had a caption that summed up her life at Hyde Park. It read, quote, "A.E., the girl in brown who walks alone. She graduated from the school in 1916." So, is brown a bad color? Like, why does she? I mean, she must have worn brown a lot if she like was described as being the girl in brown who walks alone.
Yeah, I guess, but that's just also just kind of mean. I don't know, like if she likes to wear brown, or maybe it was just like one sweater or one coat that she really liked that she liked to wear a lot, you know?
Interesting.
Oh, okay. So from what I understand about trustee, there's the grantor who puts the money into the account, and then the trustee is someone who they appoint to administer that money to the other person who's the beneficiary. So someone else is in control of the money for the other person, basically.
Thank you, Justin, for that quick tip.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
During World War I, she volunteered as a nurse at Spadina Military Hospital. This is where she ended up caring for wounded military pilots. This is where she would be introduced to the world of flying. And in 1918, she attended Columbia University to study medicine. But after only one semester, her parents convinced her to move to Southern California.
Oh.
She began to attend the University of Southern California at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing that her parents had relocated together to Southern California after she went off to school.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about Amelia's very first flight. On December 28th, 1920, Amelia and her father went to an aerial meet. She was so intrigued by the planes that she begged her father to get her flying lessons. The very next day, she had a flying lesson with Frank Hawks. He charged her $10 for 10 minutes of flying. And after getting 300 feet in the sky, Amelia knew that she had to be in the sky more often.
Oh, wow. What a name for a flight instructor, though.
Frank Hawks.
Frank Hawks. That's funny.
Some people are literally born to do certain things.
Yeah, right.
He was born to be a flight instructor, nothing else.
Mm-hmm. Or a hawk.
Or a hawk. Or a Frank.
Or Frank. A hot dog. A flying hot dog.
A flying hot dog.
I'm sorry.
Comedy. We should relabel this podcast as a comedy.
I thought you were gonna say we should call this episode Flying Hot Dogs, and then I was gonna be like, yes, but you're right.
At the beginning of 1921, she was able to get Netta Snook to be her new flying instructor. She was contracted to have 12 hours of training for $500. After saving money from her various odd jobs, she was able to save $1,000 for 24 hours of training. She had to walk 4 miles after riding a bus to take her flying lessons every week.
Oh, wow. Which how I'm determined.
Like, girl, the sky, it's... No, I'm not walking 4 miles.
Ooh. Wow, she was so passionate. I mean, she did what she had. Well, I guess... There wasn't any buses or anything, or what? Bicycles? The least she could have done is got a bicycle. Maybe she couldn't afford one or something.
Oh, don't be so damn broke. Get a car.
Oh, well, she spent all her money on the flight lessons. But crazy, crazy.
After 6 months of lessons, she was able to buy her own plane, which she painted yellow and named Canary.
Oh, wow.
On October 22nd, 1922, Earhart flew the Airster to the altitude of 14,000 feet, setting a world record for female pilots. On May 16th, 1923, Earhart became the 16th woman in the United States to be issued a pilot's license. Huh. She cut her long hair and bought herself a new leather jacket, which she slept in. So I did more digging into why she slept in her jacket, and it was because people made fun of her for having a new jacket.
Oh, so she didn't want to wear it out, so she slept in it instead?
No, like she was trying to wear it out, like literally, like she was trying to like wear it all the time so it looked used.
Oh, I see.
So I'm like, why are you making fun of people for having new things?
They just would not give her a break about her fucking jackets. What assholes.
Anything before 2000, it baffles me. Like, how did y'all let this happen?
It's crazy.
But in 1924, her parents separated and she moved with her mother and her sister to Boston. She had to leave behind her plane. She got a job teaching English to immigrant children when she got to Boston. So sad she had to leave her plane. Bye, Canary. Aww.
Bye, Canary.
Amelia always thought that flying would be just a hobby. But one day she got a surprise phone call. After Charles Lindbergh's solo flight across the Atlantic in 1927, Amy Guest expressed interest in being the first woman to fly or to be flown across the Atlantic Ocean. After citing that the trip was too much for her to undertake, she offered to sponsor another woman, suggesting that they find another girl with the right image. While at work one afternoon in April 1928, Earhart got a call from Captain Hilton H. Riley, who asked her, "Would you like to fly over the Atlantic?"
Oh.
Her flight was scheduled exactly 1 year after Charles Lindbergh's transatlantic flight. This excursion would also be the way that Amelia would meet her soon-to-be hubby, George Putnam.
Oh.
He was a publisher and a writer who wrote a book about Lindbergh's flights across the Atlantic, and he would go on to write a book about the polar explorer Richard Byrd, which is that's a cool last name. He should have been a pilot.
Oh yeah, he should have been a pilot too.
Should have been a pilot. What are you doing, Dick Bird, exploring? What are you doing exploring the polars? Amelia, on this flight, Amelia would not fly the plane. She would just be a passenger. The pilot was Wilmer Stoltz. The other passenger was an aircraft mechanic named Slim Gordon. She would serve as captain and log taker. They took flight on June 17th, 1928, and landed on the coast of Wales on June 19th, 1928. Just 20 hours and 40 minutes later. Which I'm like, how slow was that plane going?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Why did it take y'all 20 minutes to get across the Atlantic? But hey, before I get too deep into my rant, how long does it take to
get across? You said it took them 20 minutes to get across the Atlantic Ocean?
I said 20 hours.
20 hours. Oh, I think you said... Oh, okay. Okay. Wow. I mean, yeah, I don't know. Actually, that sounds kind of right to me.
20 hours? To get to London? Ain't no way.
How long is a flight? Let's say from Atlanta.
Well, they were flying. I think they were flying.
Where were they flying from?
New York, I think.
New York to where?
I guess London. No, she was in Boston, I think.
Wait. Okay. Anyways, New York to London now is 7 hours. So I could believe like 20 hours back then.
I could believe 20 hours back then, but I'm like, damn, how slow was that plane going?
It must have been going really slow. I'm surprised that they had enough fuel to last for 20 hours. I don't understand. I mean, I don't know how the plane worked, but...
Dang.
Yeah.
They returned back to the U.S. on July 6th, and they were welcomed with a parade that would later turn into the reception at the White House with President Calvin Coolidge. I'm like, I forgot he was a president.
Not one that I hear about very often, not gonna lie.
You know what? The ones you don't hear about are the least problematic ones.
That's a good thing. Yeah.
Richard Nixon?
Let's hope that Coolidge. Wait, you said Coolidge?
Yeah, Coolidge.
Coolidge. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't know anything, but hopefully he wasn't problematic.
He probably only served one term. Anyway, Amelia had become a celebrity basically overnight. With this newfound celebrity, GP, or Judge George Putnam, was able to become her agent. He instructed her not to smile not too big, because it would show the gap in her teeth, and she would, and she should stop wearing hats and just show the public her wavy blonde hair. I'm
Oh
like,
my gosh.
don't tell someone to not smile because they got a gap, but don't do that.
You
Don't
can't,
do
and then
that.
turn around and then try to give her a compliment, but you're still like talking about her appearance. Why are you so worried about the way that she looks? It'd be always so mean. Like, this is baffling.
I mean, the way women were treated.
It's ba it's crazy.
Anyway, he was basically like, don't show your gap, sis. Damn, they were so mean.
They were so mean, so wrong.
Anyway, forget what they had to say about her gap because she was raking up coins because of deals and sponsorships. Her main reason for doing it was because flying was a very expensive hobby, and she capitalized on the publicity that she was getting. So she was like, being a celebrity comes with money. It costs money to fly. I like to fly. Therefore, I need to be a celebrity. Which I'm like, get it, girl.
Valid, yeah.
Here's a fun fact. This is also the same time that Amelia decided to design her own clothes because she wanted to look good in public.
Oh, good for Amelia.
She can design her own clothes. She don't need no
Yes.
seamstress.
Mm-mm.
But anyway, so
Brown all the way.
she ended up marrying the guy who didn't like her gap in 1931.
Oh no.
But she kept her maiden name for publicity purposes, so she never became Amelia Putnam. She stayed Amelia Earhart.
Okay.
He proposed to her 6 times before she finally said yes.
You said 6 times?
Yes, 6 times. I would have said yes too for him to leave me alone.
I would have gotten a restraining order. Like, no, 6 times. That's harassment.
Justin, she's a
I don't
woman.
understand why they stayed together. What did she pro I mean, Amelia can do whatever she wants to do. I'm not here to judge her judgment, but
So they got married on February 7th, 1931, in Putnam's mother's house in Connecticut. She referred to her marriage as a partnership with dual control. And she made this really clear because she did not want to be seen as just George Putnam's wife. She wanted to be seen as Amelia Earhart, the person who married John Putnam. I mean, George Putnam. Does it make sense?
Yeah, definitely.
So, another fun fact. George was married to the daughter of Edwin Benny, who was one of the founders of Crayola.
Oh, wow.
So George was he was already he was marrying some powerful women. He was probably insecure.
I mean, all men are.
All men are. On May 20th, 1932, Earhart would go on a solo flight overseas. She left Newfoundland at 7:15 p.m. As soon as she got in the air, she started having trouble. The clouds and the rain blinded her, and her wings were covered in ice. And in the last 2 hours, one of the gauges started leaking. As dawn approached, she landed in a dairy pasture in Ireland. When she arrived back to New York, there was a huge parade. She had made history as the first woman to fly solo across the Atlantic.
Wow.
This trip had made her so popular that even the First Lady of the United States of America, Eleanor Roosevelt, had to ask to fly with her. She made it happen, and the two women took flight one night. And after that, Roosevelt wanted her pilot's license. But naturally, her husband said no, she couldn't get it.
Aww.
Teddy was like, no, what do you think you're doing, Eleanor?
Oh, no, Teddy.
Well, the reason why he didn't want her to get her pilot's license was because he said he wouldn't dare let anything happen to the First Lady of the United States.
Oh, my God. We stan Teddy. 100%. Well, 95%.
I understand the message. He's like, you're the First Lady of the United States. I can't let anything happen to you. But also, she's
well,
a grown
it sounds, woman. It sounds more like he's worried about her and he doesn't want her to get hurt, in my opinion. But
that's what it sounds like, too. But she's a grown woman.
Yeah,
come on, Teddy.
True. And that's not like he did what he wanted to do, too. So
he did what he wanted to do. He became president.
True.
And she can't even fly a damn airplane. He can run a country, but she can't. Can't.
Well,
ride
but hey, I mean, you know. Some people that flew airplanes got lost.
You're going to jail for that.
Straight to jail.
Under the jail. How dare you? On January 11th, 1935, she made history again as the first person, man or woman, to fly from Hawaii to the mainland USA. There was really no problems in the final hours of the flight. She even listened to the Metropolitan Opera broadcast on her way from Hawaii to California.
Oh, how cool. Do you know what it was?
I do not know what it was. Maybe...
Don't even worry about it. So tell me what the year was again.
It was January 11th, 1935. 1-11-35. While you do that, I'm going to finish reading a couple of sentences from my notes.
Okay. Yes. I'm sorry.
The flight lasted 18 hours. After 10 years in the public eye, her and GP were starting to not be able to afford the lavish lifestyle that they were accustomed to since the beginning of Amelia's celebrity. She knew that she had to do something that would set her up financially for the rest of her life. And this brings us to the flight across the world. In 1936, Amelia announced that she would tackle on a near impossible feat. She would fly across the world at the equator. This would be the most challenging and the most dangerous flight of any aviator's career. But Amelia was confident that she could do it. She raised $80,000 from Purdue University to help make this 29,000-mile flight possible. Earhart originally was going to make the trip solo, but she had little experience with navigations, so she gathered up a team. Paul Manns would be her technical advisor. Fred Noonan and Harry Manning would navigate. The Electra aircraft that she was in had a two-way radio and a Morse code transmitting key. Earhart also planned for this to be her last publicity flight. Were you able to find the broadcast from January 11th, 1935?
So, it's very likely that she was listening to La Traviata.
I would be too.
Yeah. It says that the performance date was January 5th, 1935. I don't see any singers that you would recognize, but I'll likely, if I'm able to, put a clip in.
Per. On March 17th, 1937, Amelia and her crew left Oakland, California for Honolulu, Hawaii. They were able to make it to Honolulu. But when they landed, the plane crashed on the runway. There are some people who blamed it on poor operation, basically saying that Earhart was being reckless. With the haters. Airplane, with the air, with the airplane being so badly messed up, the flight around the world was postponed for the time being. Amelia wanted to call off the stunt, but she had signed some contracts and raised so much money that she felt that it would be very disrespectful to back out now. While the Elektra was being repaired, Earhart and Putnam secured additional funds and prepared for a second attempt. This time, flying west to east. The second attempt began with an unpublicized flight from Oakland to Miami, Florida. And after arriving there, Amelia publicly announced her plans to circumnavigate the globe. The flight's opposite direction was partly the result of changes in the global wind and weather patterns along the planned route since the earlier attempt. On the second flight, Fred Noonan was Earhart's only crew member. So the other two guys skedaddled. They were scared. They were like, we're not doing this. Paul was like, see you later. And Harry was like, bye.
Oh, wow.
The pair departed from Miami on June 1st, and after numerous stops in South America, Africa, and the subcontinent of India, Southeast Asia, they arrived at Ley, New Guinea on June 29th, 1937. At this stage, about 22,000 miles of the journey had been completed. The remaining 7,000 miles would be over the Pacific Ocean. Earhart, yeah, why did I just say her name?
Earhart.
Anyway, Earhart felt uneasy after landing, and she also suspected that Noonan had been drinking. She wrote to GP about her uneasiness and Noonan's drinking. And he told her to abort the mission and just come home. But she was determined to make that flight. On July 2nd, 1937, at 10 o'clock in the morning, Earhart and Noonan took off from Ley Airfield in a very loaded Elektra. Their intended destination was Howland Island, a flat sliver of land 6,500 feet long and 1,600 feet wide and 10 feet high. But that was only 2,556 miles away. The expected flying time was about 20 hours, which I'm like, 20 hours of just 20 flying? 20
hours.
Crazy. God. So the aircraft was expected to arrive at Howland Island the morning of the next day. The aircraft departed Ley with about 1,100 gallons of gasoline.
Oh.
Well, I mean, like, that's a lot of gasoline.
That's a lot of gasoline.
And it's probably heavy.
I'm sure.
The Coast Guard cutter, Itasca, was positioned near Howland Island to pick up radio signals when Amelia and Noonan were close enough. Earhart couldn't adjust her radio to the correct frequency, and the Itasca was unable to hear her on their end, but it was apparent that Earhart could not hear them. She was radioing them to tell of how she had only 30 minutes of fuel left in the Elektra. They knew
30 minutes of fuel, but 100 some pounds of gas. Okay.
Well, at this point, she had been flying for about 21 and a half hours.
Oh, wow.
Because after she left Ley, she was immediately set up for Howland Island, which is in the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
Thank you for clarifying that. So they were expecting to fly for 20 hours, and they've been flying for 21.
They've been flying for 21 hours. Okay. And Earhart radioed the Itasca saying that she only had 30 minutes of fuel left in the Electra. Mm-hmm. The people on the Itasca knew that Earhart was close because they were able to get radio signals. The people on the Itasca could not see the aircraft, though. They knew she was close, but they didn't know how close, because they could hear her on the radio, but they couldn't see her. Amelia Earhart's last confirmed words were spoken at 8:43 a.m. on July 2nd, 1937. She said, quote, "We're on the line 157-337 flying north and south," end quote. No other transmission was heard after that, and they never made it to Howland Island. After reaching the island, the U.S. government went searching for her. The official search efforts lasted until July 19th, 1937. With $4 million approved by President Roosevelt, the air and sea search team by the Navy and Coast Guard was the most costly and most intensive in the U.S. history, in the U.S.'s history up until that time.
Wow.
So just to put things in perspective, $4 million in 1937 would have been $82,446,666. So basically they spent $82 million to go find Amelia Earhart.
I have no words. That's an insane amount of money.
Wow. Despite the search by the United States Navy and Coast Guard, there was no physical evidence of Earhart, Noonan, or the Electra, i.e., that they were in. Immediately after the end of the official search, Putnam financed a private search by local authorities of nearby Pacific Islands and waters. Back in the United States, Putnam acted to become the trustee of Earhart's estate, so that way he could pay for the searches and related bills. So in probate court in Los Angeles, Putnam requested to have the declared death in absentia 7-year waiting period waived, so that way he could manage Earhart's finances. As a result, Earhart was declared legally dead on January 5th,
1939. Okay.
So from my understanding, there's a 7-year wait period for a person to be, like, disappeared, for them to be declared legally dead. But in order for Putnam to get the money to find her, they had to declare her dead so that way he could get her money, so that way he could find her.
That does make sense. It smells a little fishy because I can't help but wonder if he had some ulterior motives to getting all of Amelia Earhart's money.
Well, I think it was because, I don't know, I feel like he did it with good intentions. I think he was just trying to find Amelia.
Okay.
But the crazy thing is that they had to declare her dead in order for him to get her money.
I believe that you believe that.
which is crazy, because it's like you're basically saying that she's dead so that way you can use her money to go find her.
Yeah, how is she gonna feel if you do find her and she doesn't have any money?
Well, damn it. She was probably in the middle of the ocean somewhere. I would want someone to...
I guess if she was saved. So I understand. Yeah. I understand.
And if she did get saved, she'd make a whole lot of more money. Because she'd be really celebrity.
True. But I still stand by what I said.
Justin's like, he had malice behind every action.
He wanted that money. Who doesn't? I mean, listen, the Crayola heiress, and now this. I mean,
absolutely. So now we get into the theories of what happened to Amelia.
Ooh, okay.
Now the one that we're all thinking about is probably the most popular one, and it's the theory one. And that is that she simply ran out of gas and Noonan and an air part sank to the bottom of the Pacific Ocean.
Oh, I thought you were going to say aliens. But that works.
I'm like, we're all thinking it.
Justin's we just were like, all thinking it.
We're all thinking it. No, I think that's what happened. I mean, there's nothing else in the... There's nothing else but except for Pacific Ocean.
Okay.
She had 30 minutes of fuel. She couldn't... Couldn't see the boat. And... I think she just ran out of gas and... Her and Noonan are in, at the bottom of the ocean. Theory two. Theory two is a little bit more wonky, and it's a good contender for me. Theory two is that she landed on an island that was not Howland Island. There had been some speculations that Earhart landed on Gardner Island, a nearby deserted island that is now called Nukumararu. I'm so sorry. So this theory is not widely accepted because after a search of the island, there was no proof of human activity or the Electra that they were flying in. I should add the other part of this theory proves to try to answer why there was no evidence or human activity or the plane. The first part is that that crabs ate the remains of Earhart and Noonan and the plane just drifted away. So those are the explanations as to why there was no Amelia or Fred found on the island and why there was no Electra found on the island.
Oh, people
think that's where she landed.
That's an interesting theory. I don't think I've ever heard that before. And I think that there's some, I think there's some possibility to it. There's some potential to that one.
Yeah. Theory three. She was captured and taken prisoner by the Japanese. A photo was discovered in the National Archives that depicts a woman who resembles Earhart sitting on a dock in the Marshall Islands near a man who resembles Noonan. The discovery of the photograph helps substantiate the theory that Earhart and Noonan didn't crash at all, but instead landed on the Marshall Islands, where they were taken prisoner by the Japanese. Japanese authorities insist that they have no record of Earhart or Noonan ever being in their custody.
Oh, wow, that's so interesting.
To be devil's advocate, it's 1937. Everyone looks like everyone.
I mean, true.
There's no... I mean, I just feel like everyone looks like one in 1937. Is that my husband? I don't think
there's anybody from 1937 that's going to argue with you about that.
I don't think there's anyone from 1937 that's going to argue with me about it either. And if they do, I'm going to win. Theory four. Theory four is that Amelia Earhart was a spy. And it is theorized that Earhart never intended to fly to Howland Island. Rather, she and Noonan were on a mission to document the ongoings of Japanese islands for the U.S. government. When they were detected by the Japanese, they were either shot down or forced to land.
Oh my goodness, wow.
Theory five.
Mm-hmm.
She lived, and she lived a life under a new name. In a book called Amelia Earhart Lives, the author, Joe Klass, argues that not only did Earhart survive the Pacific Ocean plane crash, but she was taken by the Japanese, found and rescued by U.S. forces.
Oh my God.
And then secretly moved to New Jersey, where she assumed the identity of Irene Bolam, a housewife.
Oh.
The pr- problem is that Irene Bolam already existed. And when she got news of this crazy theory, she filed a lawsuit against him.
Oh.
Because she wasn't Amelia Earhart. She was just Irene Bolam.
Oh, wow. I bet Irene actually probably made off pretty well with that whole deal.
But then again, it's 1937. Everyone looks alike. So
Irene looks like Amelia.
Amelia looks like Irene.
Amelia looks like Irene.
Paul looks like Carrie. Dick looks like Richard. I mean. Anyway. Either way, Earhart and Noonan have never been found. Her mother never gave up hope, and she prayed for her daughter's return. Her sisters and her nieces carry on her legacy. She was a true inspiration, and there have been a few memorial flights to commemorate the unfinished flight. In 1967, Anne Dearing and a crew of three flew a similar aircraft, like, so they flew the another kind of Electra. Mm-hmm. And they would fly this same path that Amelia flew. On the 30th anniversary of her disappearance, Anne Dearing dropped a wreath in honor of Amelia Earhart. And she dropped that wreath over the tiny Howland Island. After she returned to Oakland, she had completed 28,000 miles. On January, on July 7th, 1967.
Oh, interesting.
Another memorial flight was in 1997 on the 60th anniversary of Earhart's world flight. San Antonio businesswoman Linda Finch retraced the final flight path, flying the same make and model of aircraft as Earhart. Finch touched down in 18 countries before finishing the trip 2.5 months later when she arrived back at Oakland Airport on May 28th, 1997.
Mm-hmm.
So this shows us that this flight was absolutely possible. Amelia Earhart could have made this flight because they were using the same plane and they were flying the same path. I wonder what we'll never know what happened. Or maybe we will. Maybe one day we'll find her.
Maybe one day we will.
So to end things on a happy note, I'm going to list most of Amelia's accolades and most of the records that she broke during her lifetime.
Okay. Yay.
1922. Woman's world altitude record of 14,000 feet. 1928. First woman to fly the Atlantic Ocean. 1931. Speed record for 100 kilometers. 1931. First woman to fly an autogyro. 1931. Altitude record for autogyro. 18,415 feet. 1931. First woman to fly across the United States in an autogyro. 1932. The first woman to fly the Atlantic solo. 1932. The first person to fly the Atlantic twice. 1932. First woman to receive the Distinguished Flying Cross. 1932. First woman to fly nonstop coast to coast across the United States. 1935. First person to fly solo between Honolulu, Hawaii and Oakland, California. 1935. The first person to fly solo from LA to Mexico City. 1935. The first person to fly solo nonstop from Mexico City to Newark, New Jersey. In 1937, the first person to fly solo from the Red Sea to Karachi. There were more accolades and more records that she broke, but those are just a few of them.
Wow. She was
So
busy.
she was busy as hell. I don't know how she did it. I believe that there are some things that will happen during our lifetime, Justin. And I believe one of those things is that we will find Amelia Earhart. I mean,
Wow.
we're gonna be like so bored, we're gonna have nothing else to do.
Maybe. So,
As a society.
wow. So, what do you think happened?
I think she just ran out of gas and she dropped. Simple. I mean,
I think that that's a valid theory, definitely, because it makes sense that they weren't able to find her, especially in the place that she would have dropped into the ocean, is like where, I mean, it's like the Ring of Fire. It's like there's volcanoes and trenches, and like it's very like she could have just gotten swallowed into the ocean. There's places that we can't reach now with the technology that we have in the ocean that is because it's so deep and unknown. But with that being said, I can't help but wonder if $82 million spent today with the technology that we have today was all going towards finding Amelia Earhart. Would we find her? Probably. I mean, I think we have the technology now to scan and actually do something like that in the area that we think that she could have dropped based on, like, how much fuel she had and everything. So, yeah. But my last thing. When you said that there one of the theories is that she might have been a spy, I was like, oh, okay, wait a second. I was harping on GP about getting that money, remember? But what if she knew what she was doing and she flew somewhere else and she landed and she got off the plane and she met up with GP after he got that money? And then she changed her name and went off and lived another life because she didn't want to be famous. She just wanted money and she wanted to fly. Remember?
Okay, valid theory. I'm fucking with you.
But ultimately, I think that she was abducted by aliens.
That's a good one. That is an oldie but a goodie. Oldie but a
It
goodie.
just seems the most logical explanation.
'Cause where's the plane? I mean,
Because where's
Justin,
the plane?
we did
Because
find
where
the
is the plane?
Titanic. We did find the Titanic, though.
Hey, we found the time, and we found. I don't know. I don't know. Just saying.
Just like
We should
it's been a
do.
hundred years.
It's been long enough. It has been long enough. We should cover like the Bermuda Triangle, or so, or maybe some specific disappearances from the Bermuda Triangle or something like that. Because I mean, like there's places like that that exist too, where just disappearances happen, and there are like storms and different things, and there are legends, and that would be fun. But
Well, that's all I have for you, Justin. That was
oh
episode
wow,
10. Where is Amelia
that's
Earhart?
amazing. Where is Amelia Earhart?
Where is
Wow.
she? Wherever she is, she's dead.
Wait. Yeah, likely.
Nah, she was born in eight.
Unless she was preserved by the aliens.
Unless she was preserved by the aliens. Strong theory. But do you have anything, any news for us, Justin?
Let's see. I don't think I have any news for you. I'm working on the end of Dennis Nielsen. It'll be quick. It'll be like a band-aid. I'm gonna do it fast. And working on some other stuff for you guys. I am going to be moving, or I mean, I'm always kind of moving, but I'm going to be driving across the United States. And so we're recording a lot of episodes all at once, and that means that you're gonna get the Christmas stuff, and you're gonna get just like everything that we can give you in the time that we can. So we're really excited to give you some more episodes and bring you some more content, and we have even more content on our Patreon, which you can find patreon.com/paranormalcreativitypodcast, I think.
Yes. If you want to
No,
check us
I'm
out,
sorry. It's patreon.com/paranormalcreativity.
patreon.com/paranormalcreativity.
Yes.
If you feel so inclined to follow us on Instagram, give us a follow at Paranormal Cracktivity Podcast.
And if you have any suggestions, if there are things that you want to hear, stories, cryptids, true crime, paranormal cracktivity, all of it, just send it to our email at paranormalcracktivitypodcast@gmail.com.
I was going to ask you a question.
I was going to answer your question.
Oh, I was just going to, actually, I wasn't going to ask you a question. I was going to make a comment. I wish you safe travels because no.
Oh.
No.
I'm so excited. I decided to drive to Washington. I'm going to drive up to Washington and then I'm going to kind of go diagonally down. And maybe I was thinking about going to Arkansas and going to Hot Springs before I wrap it up. But I'll see where I'm at.
Wherever the wind blows Justin, that's where Justin's going to go.
Wherever the free campsites are, you'll find me.
Be careful with those free campsites.
I will be. I have a guard dog, so I am not too worried most of the time.
You have a bodyguard. That's what you have.
Mm-hmm. And I'm actually all set now. I got like a little tiny blow up mattress and like a little heater for my tent. So it's gonna be cold, but I'll be okay. We'll make it.
Well, that's all I have for you, Justin.
That was such a great story. Thank you for bringing that to us, Streak. You did a great job.
Thank you.
Let's see. Yeah, I think that's all we have. Thank you guys so much for listening, as always. And come back next week for another episode.
Please do.
I'm Justin, and...
And I am Drake.
And this has been Paranormal Cracktivity.
Peace.
Don't smoke crack.
Please don't smoke crack. Wait. It is not cute. It is not cute. I'm so serious.
Please don't. Have you been drinking?
No.
No? Why not? That's your first problem.